According to our next guest, for over a generation, shocking cases of censorship at America's colleges and universities have taught students the wrong lessons about living in a free society. First Amendment lawyer Greg Lukianoff has written the new book, Unlearning Liberty, Campus Censorship and the End of American Debate. In it, he walks readers through the life of a modern-day college student from orientation to the end of freshman year. Lukianoff demonstrates how this culture of censorship is bleeding into the larger society. As he explores public controversies involving Juan Williams, Rush Limbaugh, Bill Maher, Larry Summers, and even Dave Barry. Lukianoff is an attorney and president of the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, and it's a great pleasure to welcome him to the roundtable this morning.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm actually out in Brooklyn. I have a huge ancient tree blocking my entire front yard.
So there you go. It's a lot of obstacles that we're overcoming at this point.
And of course, I feel lucky.
Right. Absolutely. Of course you would. Give us a sense of how you came to this subject of looking at your concerns when it comes to censorship on campuses.
Well, I always had an interest in freedom of speech, and I got it from both having, parents from different backgrounds, so I realized that, they would have different ideas of what speech should be banned, and so it suddenly made perfect sense that the government should not be taking sides in a fight between my mom and my dad. But I went to law school, I went to Stanford, and I specialized in freedom of speech law because of my experience both growing up and with people from different cultures, and also from being a student journalist. Because if there's one thing that journalists get very, very quickly, is it doesn't matter if someone claims a restriction on speech is well-intended. They will always claim a restriction on speech is well-intended. It harms journalists first. So I specialized in that in law school. And I knew that, Stanford could be a little bit ridiculous at times, and they did go to court to defend their speech code back in 1995, but I didn't really know how bad it was until I became the first legal director of the Foundation for Individual Rights Education. I would later become the president of the organization in 2006, and the kind of cases that I saw, even though I studied First Amendment law, even though I was a big fan of the history of freedom of speech, I was not prepared for the kind of cases that I see on a daily basis at FIRE.
When you talk about speech codes, mm-hmm. What does that mean? What does that term mean?
Speech codes is a broad term to refer to the fact that a lot of universities pass codes that wildly restrict freedom of speech in ways that, when they're challenged in a court of law, pretty much get laughed out of court. And, actually, it's funny I should say laughed out of court, because an example I've come back to quite a bit was that Drexel University in Philadelphia had a policy against, quote-unquote, inappropriately directed laughter. So many of these policies, that they talk about any expression that creates vague sense of unease, expression that is offensive anywhere on university campus. One university banning speech that is offensive in the sole discretion of the university. And the thing about these codes is they are so broad and they are so vague that literally every single student at a university can potentially be found guilty under these codes, because all of us have insulted someone at some point. All of us have offended somebody at some point, and that's why they get laughed out of court. But nonetheless, universities think that by passing these codes, they're somehow doing a good thing.
When it comes to the enforcement of these codes, when it comes to the actual looking into them and making sure that they are adhered to, is that being done? Looking at the book, it mm-hmm. seems you give several examples of where that's being done.
Yes, absolutely. I open up the book talking about a student who was literally kicked out of his public college for criticizing a parking garage. It's a case that I can't really do justice to in a short amount of time, but this guy is a decorated EMT, believer in nonviolence. He made fun of a parking garage using a collage, and he was kicked out of school. I see, and then that's one of the things that comes up time and time again, is sometimes it's true, it can be something more about political correctness. You do have the situation at Tufts where a conservative newspaper during Islamic Awareness Week wrote an advertisement that quoted from the Quran and said things about how the countries that punish homosexuality by death are Islamic theocracies, which is true. At the time, there are only Islamic theocracies, and only something like 4% of Saudi Arabian women are allowed to drive or something like that. But all verifiable facts, and they were found guilty of racial harassment because these verifiable facts made people uncomfortable. And then, of course, there's the absolutely absurd case that I've brought up many times, but it bears repeating. In Indiana, again, a public college bound by the First Amendment, where a student was reading a book called Notre Dame versus the Klan. It's about the defeat of the Klan in a 1924 march on Notre Dame, and it had a picture of the rally on the cover, of the rally when they tried to march on Notre Dame. And he was found guilty of racial harassment just because the picture on the cover made students uncomfortable.
Without, and I realize this question will seem cynical to many, and I don't mean it that way, but when you look at higher education, are these codes, these speech codes that you write about, are they more enforced in sectors of the campus that are not, that do not bring in a lot of money? In the sense of, would you see this same thing in regards to a sports program that brings in a lot of money? Would you see this same amount of concern over one particular course development or program that brings in a lot of money to the campus?
It's a very interesting question, and I have to go back to what my answer is on an awful lot of stuff. It's a real mixed bag. It definitely is the case that, and the funny thing is, when it comes to like the rights of student athletes, FIRE recognizes that student athletes agree to give up some amount of autonomy by agreeing to be a student athlete. They're on a free ride. They usually have contracts, all that kind of stuff. But going to a program where they where you had professionals talking about how they have people on staff just to follow what student athletes were putting on their Facebook posts and what they were tweeting about, was really that crossed into sort of creepy territory for me. So in some cases, the biggest money makers of all are the ones they police the most. In other instances, you'll have these small community colleges like Catawba University in North Carolina, where a student was, he was definitely suspended. I think he was actually kicked out for publicly criticizing the school's overly cozy relationship with a credit card company. And the funny thing about fighting community colleges in some cases is that when you bring these cases up into when you do a press release about these cases, a lot of times the universities will kind of shrug their shoulders and say, they'll just wait for you to sue them. So it's really a very funny mixed bag. And to me, it comes down in a lot of cases just to, in some cases, the eccentricities of individual personalities who are in charge.
Looking at a broader picture, when you consider our current state of discourse in this country,
yep.
Do you believe that this censorship has any input into how things are going now?
I absolutely do, and that's probably the most sort of ambitious hypothesis of the whole book. Because this kind of, speech codes have been around on campus for about, since the 1980s. And my point is not that higher education is by itself responsible for the low state of discourse and our political polarization, but that it's our best potential remedy for that. I believe that we're polarized for all sorts of interesting reasons that a lot of sociologists have speculated on that have to do even with the fact that we live in neighborhoods where we tend to agree with people. We move to towns that are more like-minded, and we've done so increasingly over the past 20 years. That being said, higher education could be a place where we would teach people across philosophical, religious, personal divides to be able to talk to one another. But that process is utterly short-circuited if people have to think twice about what they say.
When it comes to your optimism, do you feel this will always be an issue?
You know, it's funny because I definitely see a lot to be optimistic about in the world in general. But I do think that there are some dangers of a society that's maybe just a little bit too comfortable. And one of them is that people start expecting sort of things to be comfortable all the time. And I think that our society, we're not being taught the value of freedom of speech, and that there is actually a value in having, for example, discussions that make you uncomfortable. And if we're not willing to actually understand that the requirements of democratic citizenship do mean that every so often you're going to have to go out outside of your comfort zone if you really want to learn something, then we're in trouble.
Does it trouble the students? Do they realize it walking into it? We have sort of a before and after. Do students realize it?
You know, I don't really think the students know that there's a problem. And that's, so it's funny. I remember someone saying that, to me, it's kind of like, well, my children seem to have no problem with their college. I'm like, yeah, but I'm willing to bet that they do keep their mouth shut around professors that they know disagree with them. I'm willing to bet that they probably tend to talk to people they already agree with. And they haven't absorbed that great intellectual habit that, you know, has fallen by the wayside these days. That all educated people should aspire towards, which is seeking out the intelligent person you disagree with. That's one of the things that higher education should be and could be teaching us today. And I think we'd be living in, frankly, a much more interesting, much more lively, much less tedious society if that was considered to be a great value.
The name of the book is Unlearning Liberty, Campus Censorship, and the End of American Debate. Greg Lukianoff, I thank you very much for being with us. Very nice to have you with us and for sharing your expertise.
Thank you so much.
Again, a great pleasure. The name of the book is Unlearning Liberty, Campus Censorship, and the End of American Debate. The book is published by Encounter. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.